flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listening to the best of the Patriots. Oh, yeah! A weekly mix of WEEI's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Good morning.
All right, good morning. So I heard Jones and Keith talking about this yesterday, and it started to pique my interest. The Patriots sit there at number 4 in this year's NFL draft. The Cleveland Browns sit there at number 2. Cleveland needs a quarterback. Not sure if they're going to draft a quarterback, but there's been reports that maybe they go after Abdul Carter. So if they go after Abdul Carter, if you're the New England Patriots, do you offer up your 4th overall pick for Myles Garrett? Myles Garrett, every year he's been in the league since his rookie year, he's been double-digit sacks. He's probably the best edge rusher in the National Football League right now. He's 29 years old. I think he might have 1 year left on his contract, so you probably give him like a 3-year extension, you know, until he's about 31, maybe 32, 33 years old.
It's all about money. Like, would you rather have the young guy on the rookie deal or the guy that's going to cost you $25 million a year?
Right, but the guy that's going to cost you $25 million a year, you know, is going to be top 5 in sacks.
Well, you've told me a million times that you know exactly what Abdul is going to be.
Well, there's nobody on the planet that's going to give a top 5 pick to Myles Garrett.
Nobody.
Well, nobody.
That's way more expensive than any team is going to offer.
So here are your 4th overall picks.
But it's not relevant. Like, there's nobody, there's no chance in hell the Patriots are going to say, here's the 4th overall pick for Myles Garrett. No shot at all.
No, I know that. I mean, it's something that you really have to consider if that's a guy that you want. You know, maybe you give up a first round. I'm saying, is this something that you'd be willing to do? Because me personally, I would give up my 4th overall pick, because 4th overall picks, Marvin Harrison, Anthony Richardson, Sauce Gardner, Kyle Pitts, Andrew Thomas, Cleveland Farrell, and Denzel Ward. That's every 4th overall pick going back to 2018.
Well, that's like saying I don't want to use the first pick because that was the guy
no,
in
no,
with the
but
Raiders.
There, but there's no, but there's
DeMarcus
no,
Russell.
But there's no generational player, and I think Abdul Kadir is going to be great. But if he's gone to the Cleveland Browns at number two, my question is, would you be willing to entertain getting a guy that can, you know, he might only be able to help you for four more years, but he's going to be the foundation and face of your defense.
And sounds like you would.
I would.
Based on your lead this morning.
I would definitely
do it. If you were Elliot Wolf, you would.
Yeah.
You Elliot Wolf.
Because I think the question becomes, would you rather Myles Garrett or the potential of what Travis Hunter could be?
Man, did you go to the Nico Harrison School of Trades?
Yeah.
That's such an overpay.
So
like, you don't need to give up the fourth overall pick to get Myles Garrett.
You got to give it. You just told me yesterday. I said, do you think
next year's first and a 38? That's very different than the number four overall pick.
Well, what if they want number four?
That's an overpay. You should not give number four for Myles Garrett.
Myles Garrett also, I mean, and maybe he's not going to have any say in it, but he wants to go where he's going to win.
No, I know that. I know that he wants to go.
All right, that's Wiggy's lead. I'll do my lead real quick. Curtis, huge analytics guy. You know that about me.
Oh, right? You love the Sloan Conference.
So would you like a little analytic update on your Boston Red Sox?
Yeah.
From Baseball Prospectus and the PECOTA standings. I think we all know what those are. That's player empirical comparison and optimization test algorithms. I love algorithms. Do you like algorithms?
You know what? If I don't begin my day with an algorithm, I'm totally effed.
Okay, as we sit here a week away from the start of spring training, the AL East will shake out this way, according to the nerds. Yankees finish first with 89 wins. Baltimore second with Yankees 89.7. Baltimore 89.2, Toronto 84.5, Tampa Bay 81.9, and do you know where the Red Sox finish in the division, Curtis?
I don't.
Last place, 77 wins. But
wow,
I mean, standings don't. When it comes to statistics, standings don't reflect the go get 'em and the odd occurrences and the pure gumption of the players on your team, Curtis, right? So maybe we can hope for more.
You know what should be terrifying to John Henry? How few calls we get on how pissed people are about the offseason.
Yeah.
It's not a good sign.
You think it's like malaise?
Indifference.
Yeah. It's indifference or
apathy.
Malaise.
Yeah.
And then didn't they have 81 last year? They have 81 wins last year?
Did they get to Ingersheim? What was your bet with Baseball Brett last season?
76.5.
Yeah, I think they got.
Which they went over.
Yeah, I think they were 81-81 last year.
Yeah.
So, and aren't they better this year than they were last year?
Not according to analytics.
Well, I mean, didn't you add?
Which I live and die by.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy!
It's Tommy Tuesday, Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here. What's going on, Tom?
What's up, my friends? How are you?
Very good. We're doing wonderful. You're down in New Orleans. I know it's early in the week. Maybe it's tough to get a feel for this early on in the week, but what sort of buzz, if any, are the Patriots generating in the football world? I remember asking you this a year ago. You were comparing it to like the Carolina Panthers of the world and teams like that. Where are they in terms of buzz at this Super Bowl?
Yeah, unfortunately, they remain afterthought status, but at least the thought that is given to them is one of, hey, Vrabel might be able to get you guys headed in the right direction, huh? which is generally spoken to you by, you know, fellow beat writers and media people around the country. They know you're from Boston, and they have a just tangential interest in your team and say, well, Vrabel should make it a little bit better. Yes, dot, dot, dot. And I think that that's generally the vibe around the team. We just spoke to Thomas Dimitroff this morning, and that'll be on the Patriots Talk podcast later today. But he basically said, look, and he interviewed for Tennessee and New York Jets general manager position, so he's got a still a very good, solid feeling on the league. And he acknowledged, look, the roster's bad, but if you have the coach and the quarterback, things can change rapidly. Just a lot depends on free agency and how many of those things you can fix or at least have an answer on position-wise. So you don't go into the draft saying, oh, my God, we have to get this person in the draft. And I think that's kind of what they did last year when you look at the Caden Wallace and Laydon Robinson. They went into the draft trying to draft second- and third-round picks to start, and they couldn't do it.
Where do you what's your overall thought on the coaching staff at this point? It seems like every couple of days they seem to add somebody new, a lot of guys with connections to Mike Vrabel, and then also Josh McDaniels. So how do you view the staff to this point?
Still same. I mean, what was the problem last year? It was inexperience. It was a lack of a cohesive vision, I think, that was well articulated. And I think that's going away. So if the most recent problem was inexperience and a lack of a vision, at least among the coaching staff and the direction of the team, the biggest problem is talent. And you then go out and address that with experience, with what appears to be what will be a cohesive answer to the problems with a coordinator in Josh McDaniels who is able to tailor stuff to the player because he's got so much experience as opposed to saying, here, Drake, we're going to do this. I can't help but say there's nothing negative about the group that I can really come up with. And I would have said that if you asked me in December or January, right after the hiring, what do you think of Mike Vrabel? I said, or even prior, you know, before Vrabel was hired, what does this coaching staff need to be? And I would have said experienced and able to meet its players halfway and set standards that I think too many players were ignoring over the course of 2024, but years prior too.
And I agree with that. Like the experience on this staff is a good problem to have if it's a problem at all compared to a year ago. McDaniels does feel like an outlier on the staff, though, in his lack of connections to Mike Vrabel as a coach. I know he was a coach when Vrabel was a player in New England, but outside of that tie, it's not like they've worked together on coaching staffs before. The further we go along, at least to me, he feels like an outlier on the staff. Is that a fair way to characterize it?
Yeah, I do. I think that's definitely a fair way to characterize it, and I think that the next question would then be, is this Mike's choice? Or were the Patriots and ownership pushing him towards this decision? And it is a logical question. You know, I still think it's the best candidate. I would rather see him than, say, for instance, Nick Caley. And I think you and I might differ on that. But to me, the position they're in and situation they're in, I think they need experience. They're so friggin' bad at the wide receiver and offensive line positions that they need somebody who can stand in front of those rooms and hold people accountable. And I think Josh can do that. So it was phrased perfectly, I think, by Phil Perry. If Vrabel got the job at Chicago, was Josh going to be his offensive coordinator? And one would wonder if that would have been the case. And also, too, I think, I don't know if Josh would have wanted to go to Chicago. I think he wanted to stay local with New England and a franchise that he was comfortable with in a place he was comfortable with. He's been in two different places with Vegas, most recently, and Denver at two different junctures of his life. And I think he would like some just football right now.
All right, two big-time players likely to be traded, Tom. Let's take them case by case. Myles Garrett and Cooper Kupp. What kind of chances do you think the Patriots have of getting either guy? Would they be willing to offer what it would take to get those guys and or pay them what it would take?
I'd say low chances on both because being post-30, both of them are going to want to go to a situation where they have an opportunity to win quickly. And talked to Mike Florio today about this. Can the Patriots present a case right now that allows them to say, hey, we have a vision here. We're going to be good in short order. And you are, if you're a player, you're buying on spec to come to the New England Patriots. Will Myles Garrett get his way? It's obviously a far different situation than Cups because he's one of the best players in the NFL, and he carries a massive amount of money. And he would, to me, be worthy of considering giving up the fourth overall pick for. I would give up the fourth overall pick for Myles Garrett. If he was willing to come to New England and you could put the structure of the trade in place for each team, like say Myles Garrett says, I'll go to this team, that team, that team, that team. And the Patriots were able to put a structure together. I would include the fourth overall pick for him and not bat an eye about paying him because he is that good. Cooper Kupp, to me, that's a third or fourth round pick, more likely a fourth, because you have to give up, you have to pay a ton of money when he gets here because he's got a fat contract still.
Whether it's Garrett or anybody else, and I know you've been detailing some of this with Phil Perry at NBC Sports Boston, it's Tommy Curran on a Tommy Tuesday here on Jones and Keefe, WEEI. Whether it's Garrett or anybody else, how open do you think they would be to the idea of moving the fourth overall pick for someone like that?
I don't know. I don't know how they view the draft right now. I don't know how they view this group in terms of what will immediately yield a fix. Like, if it's Will Campbell, awesome. He'll probably seems like a 10-year starter. You know, he's smart as hell. He's young. He's only going to get bigger and stronger. Abdul Carter, defensive ends and edge players can be dice rolls. He does not fit the profile of the best edge players who've come in, Aiden Hutchinson, for instance, and rattle off a few more for me, if you could, the recent years edge rushers.
Garrett,
obviously, yeah, 2017. So I don't know if Abdul Carter is that. I don't think he's Micah Parsons either. So I would move that pick because I don't think you're going to get a generational talent. I don't think that generational talent really exists in every draft just by the nature of the friggin' phrase. They're not all the time. So this is a pedestrian draft. I'd give up four for a player like Garrett, sure. And I think that the Patriots, if they're realistically looking at it, or you could say, we can't do that. We would be better off trading down from four and adding players because our pockets are empty, you know, moving and gaining more picks to get more talent. But there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat, I guess.
Obviously, it's a lot easier to clean house with the coaching staff than it is to clean house with the roster. But how much roster turnover do you expect? Because I still go back to the line that Mike Vrabel had in his opening press conference when he was asked, like, what kind of players are you looking for? And he was like, good players, which they don't have a ton of. So I know Elliot Wolf last year, first year post-Bill, like re-signed every guy that was on the team the year before. I'm wondering how Vrabel looks at it and, you know, whether that means trades or surprise cuts or whatever else. How different could the roster look next year?
It could look very different, but you have to have somebody behind these guys to get better with. For instance, and I think Kyle Duggar, a lot of it was traceable to injury. Or Ramondre Stevenson, yeah. Let's take those two instances. I would bet on Kyle Duggar being a player that you could continue to have as part of your core and carry over from Mike Vrabel. Ramondre Stevenson, he makes a lot of money. And, you know, he was outplayed for stretches by Antonio Gibson. He was certainly outplayed in 2023 by Ezekiel Elliott. Elliott was the better back for the Patriots. So I look at those contracts as being ones that you would focus on if you're the Patriots. But you can't throw everybody overboard just because you don't like the cut of their jib. Sometimes it takes a moment because you have to trot and field a team out there. And again, why did they re-sign so many of their own players? Because free agency sucked last year. And I think if you look at free agency year in, year out, oftentimes it kind of sucks. You have to do it via trade more often than not now because players sign big-ass contracts, they stay with their teams, and then like Cooper Kupp, that contract becomes obsolete. So you have to figure out a way to get those players who might not hit free agency when teams say, okay, it was nice while it lasted.
You hearing anything on Dante Scarnecchia and involvement with the Patriots this year?
The person I reached out to and asked about it said, really? That'd be good, I guess. I'll reach out to Dante at some point and double check with him and see what his intentions are. But it would be a boon to have his knowledge in there. But I haven't heard anything specifically. No. Wolf. Jones.
Wolf.
What about the game? Tom, what about the game on Sunday? Obviously, Patriots fans have a certain feeling about it with the Chiefs trying to do something that no team, including the Patriots, has ever been able to do. But what kind of just overall juice, buzz, et cetera, do you have for the game on Sunday?
I think the more you really look at the game and what and the details of the two teams, look, the sideline advantage goes to Kansas City. The quarterback advantage goes to Kansas City, but everything else goes to Philadelphia, in my mind. They have the best defense in the NFL and by a lot of measures. They have a running game and ground game that had the Buffalo Bills continued to try and exploit the ground attack during the AFC Championship game, instead of kind of veering away from it, they'd probably be here right now. You have the best rushing attack in the league with Philadelphia. You have a quarterback who can run. I really feel like Philadelphia should win the game. And the only reason that you wouldn't say they will win the game is because of Patrick Mahomes. So I'm going to say my leaning is towards the Eagles winning this one.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to say the refs would be one reason why maybe you'd pick Kansas City.
Well, you go on.
Is that a problematic story? I asked you about this a couple of weeks ago. Like, does the NFL have a Chiefs problem? You know, Goodell's getting asked about it. Kelsey's joking about it. Chiefs ownership is talking about it. Like, is that a distraction for the league? Is that a problem for the league with that such a large discussion going into a Super Bowl with the backdrop of, well, Terry Rozier is suspended for gambling in the NBA and a Major League Baseball umpire just got dismissed. Like, how problematic is that for the league?
It should be. I mean, it was less than a decade ago that Roger Goodell was being asked about gambling and affiliating with casinos and online work. And he said, you know, we can't do that because then that will cast aspersions on our outcomes fixed or scripted. So to act, you know, a decade later, like, my God, how could you ever think that, is so beyond comprehension and just defies logic. But that's how they operate. That's how the highest reaches of society, it seems, operates. My God, that would never happen. Then you ask them about it. My God, we would never consider such a thing. It's, you know, they'll tell you one thing adamantly, and then when it comes to pass that they're on the other side, they can't comprehend being questioned about it. So that's what I think we're watching. But yeah, that's the backdrop of the Kansas City Chiefs getting favorable calls. The human nature element of officiating that people prefer and should prefer to an extent, instead of making it completely automated, is going to err on the side of, well, if Patrick Mahomes gets drilled, I'm going to notice it more than if, you know, Aiden O'Connell gets drilled. You know, Aiden O'Connell gets drilled in, hey, he probably put himself in a bad spot. Patrick Mahomes, those guys are trying to take him out. Mm-hmm. It's just, that's the human nature aspect of it. The Chiefs, we watched it this year with the Patriots. You don't get calls when you're a crap team. You just don't. So.
You've been to a lot of Super Bowls, Tom. Where would you rank New Orleans as a host city in sight?
Everybody loves New Orleans Super Bowls because of Bourbon Street and the vibe of the town and the music. I like convenience and cleanliness. I liked Indianapolis.
Oh, nice. Did not expect that.
Everything was
okay.
Just smushed right in there.
All right. Midwest guy.
Like that.
Huh.
Yeah. They said the Royal Rumble in Indianapolis.
Huh.
Lucas Oil.
Yeah, like, of course they did.
You love the combine. You must love the combine is what you love. So where? So New Orleans, anything else ahead of New Orleans? Indy, anything else ahead of New Orleans?
I like Arizona, too. Clean. Warm. Easy to navigate.
Golf.
Yep.
Yeah, golf.
Arizona
is,
and Indianapolis.
Golf is factored in there somewhere, I'm sure,
that?
As well.
Can at least get to a Topgolf, yeah.
That's true. Settle a debate for us here, Tom. It was very heated earlier today. We were tearing off Super Bowl snacks. Do you like a bone-in wing or a bone-out, boneless wing?
Bone-in, as long as it's a flat. I am not big on the – yeah, I've come around on that. Used to just like the drummies, but now I'm just – so those if are, you're not going to give me
those
flat,
are the messiest ones, the flat –
I like them both.
That's the messiest,
I like a mix. I like a nice mixture.
Huh.
But it's all meat there. It's all meat.
That's
sometimes
right.
You're going to get a little bit of gristle and tendon when you get into the leg.
Yeah,
also true.
That was a good point. Yeah. I hadn't considered it that way. Tommy Curran, you can check out his work all Super Bowl week live from New Orleans on NBC Sports Boston. Quick Slants tonight. Check him out on Twitter as well at Tom E. Curran. Tom, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Tommy Tuesday.
Thank you, boys. Have a great week.
Thank you, Tom. Right.
Tom E. Curran joining us from the Super Bowl in New Orleans.
His goal in filling out the staff was to identify loyal, trustworthy coaches.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that?
Same thing jumped out to me.
Yeah, well,
same thing jumped out to me in terms of the quote. And then secondarily, for Deron, who's extremely close with his brother, as one might suspect, you know, who I understand wasn't really that happy with the way the firing was executed. And they must have been able to pass, you know, to move past it.
That was Tom Curran here on WEEI Afternoons about a half hour ago. Reacting in a similar fashion to the way I reacted, reading Mike Vrabel's quote in the press release put out by the Patriots about 24 hours ago. It was in the 5 o'clock hour yesterday, announcing the entirety of his coaching staff and saying when he put that staff together in a quote that they wanted to identify loyal, trustworthy coaches. And that Ted Johnson, that was a from Ted Johnson, yeah. Just heard in the background, Andy Hart here alongside Nick Fitzy-Stevens. What does that say to you? Are we reading too much into that? Because when we read things, we tend to, right, connect dots or compare them. Like if I make a comment about Mike Vrabel, some people will think I'm somehow comparing him to Gerard Mayo or Bill Belichick or whatever. And when you say we're looking to put a staff together that's loyal and trustworthy, people are like, huh, are not all staffs loyal and trustworthy, Mike? Or was the last staff here not loyal and trustworthy?
Yeah.
And so did that sort of jump out to you, or am I making more of this than I should?
No. It's definitely a head scratcher because it just feels like, well, that's your coach on a staff that you would think you want to, that coach wants to be working on, that he was, that's automatic loyalty, you know, and being trustworthy would be attributes that, you know, that, there's a reason they hired you to be their coach because they think that you're loyal and trustworthy. So, but for them to say it after you hire them, it's almost to me like, don't forget to be trustworthy and loyal because that's what we're expecting out of you. That I didn't like it. I don't know. I just feel like that goes without saying.
Yeah, that's how I look at it. It's almost like, you know, if I said, you know, if they had asked me for a quote in the press release for this show and it was like, when we were putting together this new show, we were looking for loyal co-hosts.
Right.
And everybody be like, oh, so
Arcan.
Arcan wasn't loyal. Right? Like, that's the immediate way you think of these things. Otherwise, it doesn't need to be said.
Or if you hired me and Fitzy hired me and you said, Ted, you're going to be loyal and trustworthy, right?
Right. Like,
I intend to be. I mean, what? Why would you even ask that?
So yeah,
it's an awkward thing to put to me in a release. And if I'm an older established coach, I'm kind of going, really? That's.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we like 12 here? And you got to put that in there.
And even more so to me in a release. It's one thing if he did the Greg Hill show. Vrabel was on the Greg Hill show and he talked for a half hour. And somewhere in there he said something about loyalty and trustworthiness. You'd be like, okay, he was talking for a long time, whatever. But when you put together a press release, you're getting your key points in there. There's only going to be, you know, 150 words. It's like the old tweets when you had to figure it out and keep it within the parameters of 140 characters. So it really, it stood out to me. And then the second thing that Curran referenced, Deron Mayo,
yeah,
brother of Gerard Mayo. Yes, you may have heard of Gerard Mayo. He was the former head coach of the New England Patriots for less than a year. And Deron Mayo was here with Bill, was here with Gerard.
He was the assistant strength coach.
Yes.
But then he became the head strength
coach. Coach under Gerard. And now he kind of is the assistant again because they brought in Frank Perano as the director of sports performance.
Sure.
So I think he oversees the whole program.
Right.
But Deron Mayo is still here.
That's interesting to me.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Good interesting or bad interesting?
Well, it makes you wonder, was something, you think, okay, why are we worrying about the assistant strength coach? Well, you're worrying about the assistant strength coach because he's, you know, he's brothers with the former head coach, and you just, information getting out, I don't know, maybe he notices things. I don't know, is Gerard building a case against
the Patriots, or does he want information so he has an arsenal that he can, you know, and his brother, you know, it just puts his brother in a bind. But it also, if I'm Mike Vrabel, I'm a little bit worried that I have someone on my staff that isn't fully trustworthy.
Yeah.
Isn't fully, you know, loyal.
The same statement where he says he's looking for loyalty and trustworthiness. Yeah. Now, maybe he's talking to Duran. Hey, the one guy on here that people are going to question, make sure you read this press release because that's what I'm looking for.
Whew.
I am
doing a press release is a little low down.
Oh, it's interesting.
Yeah.
But I also think at some point there's going to be whispers. We're going to have Mike Giardi report. A source in the on the coaching staff said that Vrabel's really struggled to do something. Whatever. I'm immediately like, huh, is that Duran Harmon? Mm-hmm. I mean, Duran Mayo, because where's his loyalty? Is it to me? Is it to his brother? Does he feel like his brother got railroaded? Which you'd have to, right? Pretty much everybody thinks that Gerard got a raw deal. Even if you thought he had to be fired, you feel like he still kind of got a raw deal, right? So I'm going to assume his brother feels like Gerard Mayo got a raw deal in New England, correct?
I think that's safe to say.
Okay. Well, now he's working for the guy who replaced him, the guy who's following up the raw deal. It's just, I know people will, you guys are always looking for salacious soap opera content, the negative side of things. No, this is weird.
Just point out, you know, things that are we find to be, you know, unusual and interesting and newsworthy.
I just, like, for example, anybody that was involved in a similar situation, you know, whatever industry you're in, you run hotels and you manage a hotel and they fired the manager and they put you in place, but the old manager's brother works beneath you and they're like, yeah, he's going to stay. You'd be like,
huh?
Wait, what's that? No. That doesn't seem like a great idea.
Yeah. Well, we saw a similar thing happen with Belichick, no?
Yeah. And what happened?
Well,
it was a train
Brian
wreck.
Was leaking all the info about it in the front of the plane and playing cards.
I mean, thank you. That was Stiz Grimey saying that, not me, but it certainly could be perceived that way, couldn't it? At least if you're Gerard, you might wonder. You might wonder where whispers come from if you have these conflicts of loyalty, conflicts of interest, whatever they may be. So,
but if you're Gerard too, maybe you like it because you have an heir in there. You know what I mean? Give you the lowdown on what's going on, what's being said.
I guess. And maybe these, maybe it's a different world. Maybe my comparisons to the real world are wrong. Maybe this, it's not a radio station. It's not a hotel. It's not a supermarket. It's not a school or anything else. It's the NFL. It's different. Duran Mayo says, there's only 32 of these jobs on the planet. I
like
want one of these jobs.
I want to start a family here. Who knows what's going on in his personal life.
I like the organization. I like working with these players. I like the equipment, whatever it may be.
You know the first name that came to mind when I saw that part of the quote? It wasn't Duran Mayo. It was McDaniels. The only member of the...
I like where you're at, Dan Ball.
The only major member of the non-Mike Vrabel coaching tree hire, so to speak. Everybody that says, the only reason he has a job is because of Robert Kraft. That was the first name that kind of jumped out when I saw
that.
Done.
Wait, ding, ding, ding. I mean, that's to me, that makes more sense because there's a lot of people that think that maybe Josh McDaniels was not a Mike Vrabel hire, which I just can't imagine Vrabel would give that power away. I would think he'd have the power to select whoever he wants an offensive coordinator, but let's just go with the fact that or the thinking that that's a Kraft plant there and that Mike signed off on it. It's obvious to me that Josh McDaniels would be the one that I would be concerned about because he's the one that is head coaches in this league. He's the one that people think is going to butt heads with Mike over awesome offensive philosophies. And so he's the guy that kind of stands out as, but man, that's an interesting way to make your point to Josh McDaniels is to do it in a press release.
Also, if that's true, let's just say he kind of as he
I'm wondering if Josh is reading that going, is he talking about me?
Well, let me do the other end of that. If he is talking about Josh, or if that's part of what we should be discussing, is Robert saying, is he talking about Josh? Is he telling Josh to be loyal to him and not to me? Is my head coach?
Yeah.
Is my head coach telling one of his assistants that he works for Mike Vrabel, not Robert Kraft? Because y'all work for Robert Kraft. Y'all need to remember that. I'd almost want to put out another release.
In fact,
you work for me.
Every press release moving forward, run it by me first.
Right.
Let me make sure I get it on my desk before we actually release it.
So whoever he's talking to, or whoever thinks he's talking to them, this is interesting.
Yeah, it is.
There's layers to it.
Yeah. Don't want to make a big deal out of it, but it's definitely newsworthy and noteworthy.
And I got to tell you, I've been doing this a long time. No disrespect to Stacey James and his department. 99.9% of the time, the quotes in a press release are useless. They are just, what do they call, boilerplate, boring.
Yep.
No, this one, I was like, huh, do I need to start reading these more closely? Are these quotes and press releases more informative than you think they're going to be? Because this was...
Well, it's you hire all these new coaches. There's four that are being retained, but the rest of them are all new. And in the tone you set with them is, don't step out of line. Don't be disloyal. You better be trustworthy. It feels a little to me, I don't know, not demeaning, but just kind of like talking down to him.
Yeah, and let me flip this in one other direction. So Mike Vrabel lost a lot of games at the end in Tennessee. It's why he got fired. But what else happened that led to his firing?
Issues with the owner.
Yeah, and where'd those issues stem from?
Trust issues.
Yeah, because he went to Gillette Stadium and said,
with the old
I'm
team.
Always a Patriot and we got a game to go win.
It's not like this everywhere else, you know?
Does that sound like a loyal and trustworthy head coach?
Yeah.
Or does that sound like a guy who didn't really want to coach his own team anymore? Wow, we can really read into things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
which maybe you are doing.
So you're trying to get to a point. You're trying to. Mike might be a hypocrite in that release.
Oh, I think everybody's a hypocrite first and
okay.
foremost.
We're all
but
hypocrites.
Yes,
just
with that quote, I think he lost his previous job because there were questions about his trustworthiness mm-hmm. and loyalty to his present employer, and was he canoodling and looking mm-hmm. for a future employer in Foxborough?
And he might sit here and say, well it goes both ways. I was told certain things. And
loyalty's
a
two-way street.
Two-way street.
Hey, we learned that this week. Yeah. All the players in the NBA were talking about that. Giannis and everybody else, that loyalty in the NBA, they criticize players that want to leave, but then teams can trade a guy like Luka at the drop of a hat. Yeah. So loyalty is a very interesting topic in
it
a
is,
lot of ways.
I will tell you this. It is interesting. This coaching staff's got everybody kind of worked up about the dynamic. That, to me, is interesting. I don't think it's going to be an issue, but it's something to watch. And a lot of you guys that I respect their opinions of think that the way it's kind of been put together, that this staff might have some internal struggles as the season goes on.
And it's something, unfortunately, we're going to monitor with no information through September. We got a long ways to get to because there's no football games. Because the only way to really measure it is success, failure, cohesion on the sideline, on the football field. Because I'll be honest, if we're noticing anything in May passing camp, June mini camp,
I'd say two weeks into training camp. Don't you think 2 weeks in the training camp? But
if we notice anything with the coaching staff on the practice field, we are porked city.
Define anything.
Oh, okay.
Something that smells funny, looks funny, tastes funny, or isn't quite right.
You're right.
Conversations that don't seem friendly and
if it doesn't look right, I've been to training camps in the NFL for 25 years. They kind of all look the same.
That's
you got coaches,
fair.
Everybody has
Everyone's
jobs.
Everyone's playing nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
If there's issues on the practice field before they play a single game, then we got more problems than we know.
That's
we
true.
Won't know about this until September, October, November, wins, losses, whispers, unattributed quotes.
Yeah. When it's too late.
When it might be too late.
You're fresh off the Pro Bowl. You told our friend Kay Adams the other day that, you know, maybe you're doing a little bit of recruiting, talking to the guys about the area. Free agency's upcoming. It's going to be big in terms of roster building for the Patriots this offseason. How do you try to encourage players to come to the Northeast and come to Foxborough? Because, especially lately, Drake, it hasn't been necessarily a place that guys are dying to come play.
Yeah, I think obviously since the dynasty's been over and we're trying to get back there, so I think it's a huge thing. I think the number one thing is selling the city, selling the fans. They love you, and when we're winning, which we need to do, you know, they're behind our back, and I think we got something to look forward to in Buffalo.
Drake May last night at the Super Bowl. He's been making the rounds. That was with Phil Perry on NBC Sports Boston.
Selling Boston.
He is.
Yeah, of course, they play in Foxborough. And the guys all live in Attleboro.
Well, not all of them.
Some live in Providence. They live in Foxborough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're Wrentham, you're Attleboro,
sure.
You're Foxborough.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Canton.
Providence.
Yeah. Good brewery out there.
Yeah. No, tremendous. But some players are Boston. Cam was in Boston when he was here.
Well, yeah, maybe he was.
You got to be like
part of the problem.
Got to be big ticket though, right?
Yeah.
You know, Brady, Edelman,
right.
Gronk.
No,
eventually.
No, I
get
it. He's just trying to say the right things, but it is always funny. And like, I always get a kick out of it every time the Patriots play on a primetime game. They always show like Faneuil Hall, like you know, like the primetime games. They're like, here it is, the city of Boston. You're like, yeah. And then 40 miles over that way is it's where they actually play the games.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
You sit in an hour's worth of traffic, more than that, on a game day. You'll get there no problem.
Uh-huh.
So. How do you sell players to come play in New England? I think the easy answer is just pay them more money, which we can get to, because I have questions about that with Kraft. How do you sell him? Is it as simple as Drake May?
So I think to put money to the side, because I think money is the number one thing everywhere. I know like Myles Garrett was saying it isn't the most important thing, but whatever. It is for almost every single player. Maybe you can find like a 1% of guys that isn't. So I think you can sell him on a few different things. One would be Drake May. I think another would be Mike Vrabel. I think both of those guys are pretty easy sells, to be honest. And then depending on the player and the position, don't you also sell them on their role and how important they're going to be to the turnaround? Like, I think if you brought in...
Right, it's like, we have Vrabel, we have Drake May.
Yeah.
We have nothing else.
No.
You guys can be part of it. We're set at coach quarterback.
Yeah.
You guys can be part of the turnaround, and you're going to be the best player at your position. You're going to be a leader at your position.
Yeah.
You're going to get a lot of play. If you're a receiver or a running back, there's tons of playing time for you. Yeah.
Yeah, and like the NFL is different than the other sports too, because actually maybe the NBA is even becoming this way too. They're really like market proof. Like you don't have to play in New York, you don't have to play in LA to be, you know, on every commercial and super famous. And like if you're winning and you're really good, you're gonna be there. Like you see Rob Gronkowski everywhere you go, right? Like you can do that. So if that's something that any of these players that aren't familiar with New England are worried about, I don't think they need to be worried about that at all. And just the nature of the NFL, bad teams can become good teams overnight. You know, it happens all the time. Like, you could point to a million examples. You could point to Washington this year, Houston last year, like, on down the line, be like, hey, we could be that. Like, why can't we be that? We have a coach that knows what he's doing. We have a quarterback who is at least arrow pointing up. So yesterday, when we did our top 10s, we didn't have him starting the year in the top 10, but doesn't mean he can't jump into that conversation at some point. They at least know who their guy is, which is a leg up on, you know, 10 other teams.
No, for sure. So I think Vrabel's a good one. I think selling a player on their role is always a big one. And I think Drake May. I mean, you hope guys want to play with Drake May. I saw an interview with Myles Garrett yesterday. Maybe this is what you were referencing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was asked, I think, by Mina Kimes, would you want to play with a guy like Jaden Daniels? I mean, would that be a big factor? And it's like, well, yeah. You want to play with a good quarterback if you're a defensive player.
Mm-hmm.
You want to play with a guy on the other side of the field. He doesn't want to play with more Jameis Winston, Deshaun Watson,
so?
DTR.
Bailey Zappe?
Yeah, he doesn't want to play with those guys.
Oh, okay.
And so, of course, you want to play with a young, up-and-coming quarterback. Now, is Drake May viewed that way? I'm starting to wonder if we've even undersold it to a degree, Keith, given how popular he's been, just interview media-wise. Coming out of the Pro Bowl and into the Super Bowl, and these interviews, this is a local one, but there's been a bunch of national ones as well.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, just watching some of his popularity at the Pro Bowl with other players. He's going around interviewing guys, poolside, leading up to the Pro Bowl. And so maybe there is more of a draw with him than even we give it credit for.
Yeah, I think, you know, when these guys come into the league as really high picks, you know, like Mac Jones was a first-round pick, but he was 15th. There's four quarterbacks taken ahead of him. It was like maybe a little bit different. But Drake May, like all college year, there was thoughts about him being like the number one pick in the draft and everything like that. So he came in with a little bit of hype. And then he didn't start right away. But then once he started playing, I think, you know, just what other teams were saying about him. Remember when they played the Rams and you heard like what Sean McVay had to say about
him?
That's true. Like there's definitely something that other players and coaches take notice of.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember how many of it was players. There definitely were coaches. McDaniel did it. I mean, McVay did it. Those are two great offensive minds, very complimentary.
I want to say Josh Allen might have when they played the Bills.
So,
like, I think,
so he might be an even bigger selling point than we prop it up to be. What's your confidence level Kraft is going to spend? Because I think that's the biggest
It's
impediment.
Lower than any of the other things. Like convincing someone that it's okay to play in New England and selling them on joining a team that just won four games. Second-year quarterback, Mike Vrabel, like all of that stuff I think is a lot easier to sell when you have the money behind you. The fact that Robert Kraft is going to do it, I don't know. I was shocked he didn't do it last year. Now, maybe did he learn his lesson, right? I think he may have learned his lesson from just giving the job to Gerard Mayo. He at least changed that.
That's true.
So that's maybe a positive sign. I don't think you can be super cheap with it. I just wonder, would Mike Vrabel have accepted the job So last year, different story. Gerard Mayo wouldn't have gotten any other job. So Gerard Mayo got the job, wanted to spend money, but I doubt he was given any assurances that they were going to do it. And so that's sort of different. Like, would Mike Vrabel take this job?
I think he might have thought he had some assurances early on.
Burned some cash, I understand. Yeah. But, like, they quickly told him, like, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
But, like, does Mike Vrabel take this job and, hey, we're just going to bring back some of our own guys and we're going to kind of, like, you know, cut corners here and be dead last in cash spending for the third straight year, I would like to think Mike Vrabel would be like, well, what are your expectations then? Like, how many games do you want us to win if we're not going to spend on players?
So I have a confidence they kind of have to spend. I mean, Kraft made reference to this at Vrabel's introductory press conference. They kind of have to spend. They look at it 3 years rolling annually, the money out. So they kind of have to spend. But are they going to get uncomfortable for big-ticket free agents? And I think you'll know that when you see it. Are they going to outmaneuver, outbid people for T. Higgins as a prominent name or Ronnie Stanley on the offensive line? Are they really going to go all out for some of these players, like a big-ticket item? This is kind of how we talk about the Red Sox here and there, and the Red Sox spend no money. I think the Patriots will spend some money. I think they kind of have to spend some money, and
yeah,
Kraft
right.
has foreshadowed
do.
That. Are they going to, again, outmaneuver other teams for a big-ticket free agent? Can you land that big fish and not turn around and say, well, this guy wanted to sign there because of his girlfriend, and that guy wanted to
it's
sign there.
It's not about finance.
No, it is about finance.
It's mostly about finance.
And so are you going to make it about finance
so
and go get players this offseason?
Yeah.
At the top of the market, I still don't have confidence Kraft is going to do it. I hope he does, but I'm not confident in that at all.
So they have signed big free agents post-Brady. They haven't signed any big free agents post-Belichick. Right, you could be like, well, Belichick was the one signing him.
Right.
But like in 2021, there was no Tom Brady selling point, and they were coming off a missed playoff year. And you could argue about how good any of these guys are, but like right away, they signed Matt Judon. They signed both Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. They signed Jalen Mills. They signed a few other guys. Like they were very, very active. Like Devon Godchild might have been part of that wave.
Yep,
like, they signed like a ton of guys, and some of them were good. Some of them obviously weren't. But that's not the thing. Is the thing is they spent a lot of money. Like they needed a tight end. We thought they needed one. They went out and got two. Now,
yep.
Whatever you want to say about those guys, but they were two of the three highest ranked tight ends in free agency that year.
This would be my hope. 2021, it's great. They spent a ton of money.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, $250 million. I don't remember. But they went out and spent like crazy. I'm not going to complain about that. But can you, beyond just Matthew Judon, who was a premium player, a premium position rather, can you spend at some premium positions? Not, let's double up at tight end, which
is
a premium position.
Well, they got Kendrick Bourne that year.
I know, but that wasn't a top-of-the-market player that
no,
year.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, they spent on receivers, but the receivers they spent on were Aguilar and Bourne.
Yeah.
They spent at the top of the tight end market.
Drafted a quarterback.
Flip that. Why don't you spend on the real premium positions? I'll give them credit for Judon that year.
Yeah.
There wasn't much else. So spend at tackle, spend at receiver, spend at corner if you want to. Like those are the spots to do it. And again, I don't really have faith they're going to do
mm-hmm.
that. I think they're going to spend more than they spent last year. I think they'll spend more because they have to. They haven't really spent in 3 years. But are they going to get those big ticket players at premium
but
positions?
Like,
if they do, I'll feel much better about the Patriots moving forward.
Don't you feel like that should be the case? I just feel like Bill was pretty unique in that where you would spend money, you'd have the highest paid long snapper, you'd have like two of the highest paid gunners. You would kind of prioritize these weird things. Even in the years before they got rid of Joe Tooney and Shaq Mason, they had like two of the four highest paid guards in the NFL. And you're like, what about wideout?
Right.
Like, what about pass rush? What about corner? Like, what about these guys? And I like to think Vrabel would look at
maybe.
That.
Maybe. Yeah. Like I said, if he does, then I'll feel much better going forward.
Time will tell.
If it's more of the same,
yeah.
They're spending money, but they're like last year, they technically spent money. They just brought everybody back off their crappy team.
Yeah.
So not just spending the money, which would be good. How are you spending it and who are you spending it on?
None of us, certainly me, need to feel any older, but you probably don't want to know how long ago White Iverson dropped.
We
10 years.
10 years ago.
Oh, that's all?
Yesterday. Yeah. Oh, that's all?
That yeah. seems like
it
a...
It doesn't seem like 10 years.
No, it doesn't.
No, it does not.
Man, I missed that Post Malone.
No. 10 years ago on SoundCloud.
Yeah.
It is a Bruins Thursday. Mike Milbury will join us at 9 this morning. And it is so great to have our next guest back on the show. It's been a while. The great Dante Scarnecchia. Hello, Dante.
Good morning. How's everyone doing today?
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Bill O'Brien was just on this program, and he appears to be dropping news left and right. I don't know what you can and can't say, but he is... he's informed the world that you're going to be consulting with the New England Patriots next season. Can you talk about that or not?
It's not true.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh. That's kind of sad.
Well, he did kind of walk it back this morning, Dante, where he said, well, you've been doing this the last couple of seasons, and you've always kind of been in this role. So is that true, that you have been helping out kind of behind the scenes, and you're going to continue to do so?
I have not been helping out behind the scenes. I'm not involved over there.
It's because you're focused on one thing and one thing only, and that is total world pickleball domination. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, the domination part's not going so well, but I'm having a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, he's got to be. Who's the athlete we just talked about who's now going to stop playing? Oh,
J.D. Martinez.
J.D. Martinez. Be careful. He started playing professional pickleball, so maybe there's a league you could play in, Dante.
Is that the baseball player, J.D. Yeah. Martinez?
Yeah.
Well, hell, he ought to be good at it.
Yeah. Probably will be. Said he's training to play pro pickleball.
He signed with the team.
Oh, yeah. Good for you.
Dante, how you feel about this choice when it comes to Mike Vrabel as the head coach here?
I love it. I think it's spectacular. I think he's really a great coach, and I'm not making comparisons to anybody. I think Mike did a really good job at Tennessee. I've been on the field and watched him as both an assistant coach, a coordinator, and as a head coach. He commands the room as a head coach, commands the field as a head coach. He's involved in everything. He knows what everybody's doing and how they're doing it. And he's the boss, and I just respect that about him and love him as a player. He's a great person, and I just really, really happy for him. And I think it's a great fit here in New England.
Dante, you've been in a role where you were in the NFL for a long time, and it was all about respect, and you garnered a lot of respect from players that played for you. What do you think the most important piece is? Because you talk about Vrabel and Vrabel getting that respect. What do you think the most important piece is as a coach for players to basically buy into that respect of you as a coach that you need to do?
It's very simple, Jermaine. You have to convince them that you can help them be the best player that they can be. Stand up in front of them and tell them how to do their job and how to make them better players. Because look at, you know the deal. If you play good, you get to stay. If you don't play very good, you're out. And so they'll do anything they can if what they're hearing is convincing to them that, hey, this guy can help me become a better player and do my job as good as I can do it, then they get to stay around for a while. And I think that's it, And how can this guy, in this case, Mike, how can he make our team better? And when he gets up in front of them, it's going to be very apparent to all of them how he's going to make it better. And I think that that's the key. That will be the key to his success.
Dante, any stories jump to mind when you were coaching on the staff? Obviously, you're not coaching the defense, but anything that you saw Mike Vrabel do in particular on the Patriots roster that you said this guy could make a coach one day?
Well, I learned it the hard way when Mike was no more than a substitute defensive end at Pittsburgh, which he did for 4 years. I mean, he never started, but he was one of those guys that got out there in certain pass rush situations, and we were playing him late in the game. And I had heard about Mike because he was such a great player at Ohio State. And here we are in the fourth quarter. And this was pre-Belichick, and we had a chance to beat him over there. And, here he's on the field, and he runs by our left tackle, who was a good player, and slapped his hands down and strip sacked Drew, and game was over. And I said, oh, damn. And then the next time, the very next year, he's on our team. And it just hit me right right away. For what I saw him do on one play, I'm glad he's on our team and I don't have to coach against this guy. And then he became really, for me, my arch nemesis on the field, because he would do everything possible to mess with us, especially
in OTAs and mini camps where no one had any pads on. He'd hold guys on stunts, and then he'd look over me at me and smile as I was cussing his face off. And it just, that's how it was with him. You know, he just would try to get under your skin and mess with you, because to him, it was a lot of fun. And now when the games were on, he was serious as a heart attack. But I love the guy, man, for what he did for us for so many years. He's special.
Who are you leaning towards Sunday, Dante?
You know, that game is so damn close, it's sickening. You know, what's a 1.5-point spread? Not that I gamble, which I don't. But I just think you're going to have a hard time ever convincing me to go against Patrick Mahomes. I just can't do it. He's such a good player, and he's carrying that team. And when you look at the statistics offensively, you know, it's he and Kelsey. You know, I mean, Kelsey's the leading receiver. He's throwing it, and they won a bunch of games. And you just can't bet against that guy, especially if it's a close game. You know, he finds ways to beat you. And I think Philadelphia is a really good team. They certainly have, you know, a great running game, and the quarterback's good, and they got good receivers, and their defense is awesome. And if Philadelphia can rush four and cover with seven, they may have a better chance of beating Mahomes. But, you know, it's just a hard thing to beat that guy.
You were here for a long time with a quarterback who was from time to time accused of getting favorable calls. Do you think that some of the officiating goes the Kansas City Chiefs' way from time to time in this league?
No, I don't pay any attention to any of that stuff. You know, I don't. Look at, fans are so rabid and fanatical, and that's why they're called fans. And, you know, it hurts when you lose, and especially when you got a chance, you know, with those guys, to beat those guys. But we played them a lot of times. Maybe we had, you know, the Krypton for it with Tom and Kryptonite. And at any rate, you know, I just didn't think that's a big deal with it. You know, I think the officials are busting their butts to do as well as they can and make it, and, you know, and make the right calls. And with, you know, replaying all the rest of that, you just got to think they're doing it the right way.
Well, Dante, it is always great having you on this show. We tried one time. One of my goals this year is to do some sort of pickleball related foundation fundraiser and to have you be a part of it. So I may shoot you.
I would do it at any time you want. Just let me know and I will try to get it done. But it would be so much fun, and especially with a lot of the people over there, I'd look forward to it.
All right. Dante Scarnecchia, great to talk to you, and we will talk to you again soon.
Take care, everybody. Stay healthy. Bye.
Thanks, Dante. Right.
Well,
oh, I love him.
I mean, that was, weren't there breathless Patriots beat writer reports, Curtis, that Dante was back? And apparently he's not.
It's not.
You just got to go to the source on these things.
Right?
That's what we do on this show, is go to the source.
Little bus behind the scenes here. Oh boy, was Ted Johnson's reaction to that Greg Bedard comment. Boston Sports Journal.
Smells in here a little bit. I don't know, what's that smell?
Oh, so you're saying you don't buy necessarily that you're ready to be shocked, have your doors blown off by Josh McDaniels and his new look offense that he's been tinkering with for a year, pulling from college and visiting all these places. He went to Kansas City. He met with Andy Reid. He went with Chip Kelly.
It's like he laid it on a little too thick.
Propaganda.
It was a little thick. That's what it sounded like a little bit. It's like, geez, Greg, you don't have to make it so obvious.
And I have the issue of, I love Josh. I always get it out of the way. I love Josh. I think Greg, based on that comment, loves Josh.
I would say so, yeah.
No, come on.
But Josh is a play caller. There's only so much you can do with play calls. I know Ben Johnson has created this world where we're going to gush, or Sean McVay. Who's Josh going to go to the field with at receiver, offensive line, running back? Because to blow my doors off, aren't they going to have to make a lot of plays, score a lot of points, be very entertaining, as Fitzy said earlier? And That's where the players come in. So Josh can have plans of blowing my doors off, but if it's Javon Baker and Jalen Polk and Kendrick Bourne, I don't know that I expect my doors to be blown off. In fact, I think Bedard is kind of setting Josh up to fail. Like, he's setting a really high bar right there.
I would say so. You know, and I am curious, though, to kind of just maybe flesh this out a little bit. Fitzy, I'd be curious your thoughts. Is, you know, Josh is a play caller. You think he's a good play caller? And what is it about how he calls a game that makes you think he's a good play caller?
Fitzy.
I believe what makes Josh a good play caller is understanding the rhythm of the game. Josh, I don't believe Josh lives and dies by his pregame script. I don't believe Josh lives and dies by what they talked about all week. I don't believe Josh lives and dies by, no, this is what we do, and that's what we're going to do out here. Josh calls plays as he sees fit, depending on the lead or the deficit in the game, where he sees availabilities, where he sees gaps, cracks, weaknesses, and openings. I think he reads the whole board, not to do the whole classic Patriots fan, chess over checkers, Ted, but I feel like that's how Josh sees the field. And it's a progression, and he's like intelligently tuned into where they were, what the tendencies are, and how he sees the game playing out. Like, he evolves just like football games do. So his script is constantly being rewritten on set, if you will.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good answer. And it's a situational in football he's very, very sound at. And then,
yeah,
I don't think we're going to have issues like before the half. Like, you know, wait, are you trying to score points? Because you ran on first down, you know, and then you had to hurry up and run another play, and he burned off 30 seconds. You know, like, he's going to know how to manage the clock.
Yep.
Situationally, I think it's going to be a heck of a lot better. And I'll say this about, because you've mentioned the fact that Josh has been studying.
Yeah.
I love hearing that. If it sounded like a sales job, but regardless of that, I like that he's learning new styles. You got a quarterback who can run the ball. I think that is trending in the NFL. If you look at the quarterbacks that are in the playoffs and in these championship games, there is a running aspect to their game. And I think he's got to be ahead of the curve on that. He, other than Cam Newton, he's never coached a running quarterback quite that can also throw from the pocket like Drake May. So I like that I'm hearing he's kind of learned other things in this offseason. I had to giggle because I feel like that's a little bit of Bedard saying, and I think you're right, it's putting a lot of pressure on Josh. Like, he's coming in and it's going to be, you thought he was good the last time you saw him, just wait.
But it's also a pushback against the negative views of Josh that he's set in his ways, he's a dictator, he's got his 500-page playbook, and damn it, Brady could run it, you're going to run it. Garoppolo ran it, this is the way I do things. I think it's a response to that, and I think it's smart, quite honestly. I mean, he hasn't had a Drake May quarterback, so to see what the Chiefs do with Patrick Mahomes, who can run but isn't a runner until he needs to be, or the season's on the line in an AFC title game, or even, what's the kid's name at Ohio State? Howard was the quarterback this year that they got into the championship game, and they were running like QB powers and different things that Chip Kelly decided it was time to run these. Like, I am intrigued by what Josh is going to try to do. That's where I sort of deviate from Bedard. Bedard makes it sound like because Josh is here, they're going to roll out of bed and just have this wow offense. I love Josh. Didn't we feel the same way about Bill O'Brien? Oh, he was going to fix everything. Until he didn't. Because you still got to have the receivers, the line, the playmakers. The quarterback has to execute at a relatively high level. So I think I want to be properly setting expectations with Josh. Is he better? Will the offense be better? Will the plan be better? Will they execute in those times you talked about? End of the second quarter, half, whatever? Absolutely. As long as they can actually execute. Because if Fedarian Lowe's the left tackle, you know who's screwed? Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, but you don't really expect the Patriots to trot out the same offensive line or an offensive line as incompetent as last year. Like, well, I think a lot of the confidence that's being placed in Josh taking the offense over comes with a potentially dangerous, but I believe logical presumption that there's going to be an improved offensive line, that there will be better talent at wide receiver, and therefore with a better surrounding cast of coaches and intelligent characters, that all the tides will raise the boats, and then Josh will be the one to not only steer the ship back into port, but also do so gloriously. I don't think I have any more faith in any one aspect of Boston sports now. Red Sox being competitive, Bruins hopefully making the playoffs and not trading the farm away, Celtics repeating, etc., as I do in Josh McDaniels turning the offense around whole stock this fall.
See, and that I think is an issue. And Fitzy, I agree with you. I don't expect Vedarian Lowe to be the left tackle. I don't expect, you know, whatever, Jalen Polk to be the number one receiver. But the problem is the person, Elliot Wolf, that came into last season expecting Chukwuma Okorafor to be the left tackle and Jalen Polk to be a plug-and-play rookie receiver and K.J. Osborne to be better than he was in Minnesota is still in place. So until I see an offseason that brings in talent that I can comfortably say is better, I have a little... Let's just say I have more faith in Josh's ability to coach than I do in Elliot Wolf's ability to put the roster together because of last year.
And I'll say this: I'm not sure it's going to be Elliot Wolf picking the players. My feeling is Josh is going to be working closely with Mike to get the right players for whatever system Josh has. You know, I don't think it's not going to be the Shanahan, but you know he might have specs for what he wants for each position, mm-hmm. right? And this is the offense I'm trying to run, and so. Go get me this type of player at this position. I think there'll be more of a synergy there when it comes to the personnel and the coaching. I think they'll be more on the same page. I don't think AVP was telling Elliot Wolf who to pick in the draft. Right. Elliot Wolf was just giving him players to run his West Coast offense, and I think that's mm-hmm. going to be a big difference. I think Josh is going to work hand in hand with the front office people.
Can we squeeze in a call here quick, Fitzgerald? You want to talk to somebody who thinks that Josh did good things, I guess, with Mac Jones. So, David in the car, what are your thoughts on Josh McDaniels? Is he going to blow our doors off?
Yes, he is. And I'll tell you this, why, boys. And the reason I call you boys is I'm a lot older than you guys. I'm almost 60. So, when you think about it, what Josh
I was curious to hear what they said. Man,
wind old it up, man yeah. dropped his phone.
Well, okay.
Never know what he had to say. Let's go to a legend, I think, if the name and the city are accurate. Alan Everett has a thought on Belichick and Brady. Al.
A thought. I got more than one thought. Is that Andy or Fitzy? Is that Fitzy?
That's Andy, and that's Fitzy, and that's Ted. It's We're Andy. All here.
So the great Ted Johnson will tell you both in that studio. Hi, Ted. How are you?
Hey, Al. What's up, buddy?
Hey. Ted Johnson was drafted by the greatest coach of all time. But here's an aspect that no one talks about. Two aspects of this whole story with the Brady Belichick thing, which is absolutely ludicrous. After all that you've seen, how could you even compare? How could you even question it? So forget about that I called the station 5 years ago and said that Brady was going to expose Belichick for the fraud he is. Donald, forget about that. I told you he was going to get fired, and I told you he wasn't going to get hired. But here's an aspect, and thank God Teddy's in there for this one. Back when Ted Johnson was drafted by Bill Parcells, and all your guys, Teddy, McGinnis, all of them, all the great players, Vinatieri, all brought in by Parcells, that locker room, that structure he created there and the of the team and the leadership he instilled in those guys, with McGinnis and you, Teddy, and all those guys. Here's what everybody misses. And Andy Hart, you should listen to this one. You never hear it. They went, Teddy, once you guys were gone, you won the three Super Bowls. Once you, McGinnis, and all those guys were thrown to the side like by the I call them Coach Coattails. Once you were thrown to the side by Coach Coattails, what happened? They didn't win a Super Bowl for 10 years. 10 years were wasted with Tom Brady. And then Brady come back. Let me ask you this. Andy Hart, you worked for the team.
Yes.
Why does anyone, how come nobody ever talks about and gets to the bottom line on this one? When Belichick tried to send Brady away before those last three Super Bowls and keep Garoppolo, why don't we get the – why, Fitzy, why do you let that – that is beyond.
Big Al, what do I let happen?
You let it happen.
And the Kraft stopped it. The Kraft stopped it. Why don't – does that count against Belichick? But even thinking – imagine if Andy Reid right now – it's the same thing. Right now tried to keep the backup quarterback and send Garoppolo away to San Francisco. Imagine doing that. So it was absolutely talk about a black mark on his record. Why is that never talked about?
All right, thanks for the call, Al. That was a
good call, Al.
That was essentially a grab bag version of a phone call. There, he was a lot going all on. Over
fired
the map,
up.
And he was.
He should call in more often and not just have like he was like flipping through his like stenographer's notes of like things he's wanted to say over the last couple of years.
And then Fitzy, I think he was holding you accountable for the fan base. I think he was holding me accountable for like the organization or something. And Ted, I think you got off scot free because you're just one of the great players that Parcells brought in.
Right,
but that was a good call. Appreciate that call. Now we'll go back to real quick. David in the car has a better sell. David, what were you thinking about McDaniels before we lost you?
Sorry about that, guys. Yeah, so you look at McDaniels, what he did with Mac Jones when they had no receivers. Well, who did the Patriots have when Mac Jones took over? And Mac Jones had a hell of a year. He broke records. He went to the playoffs. So McDaniels is a real good offensive coordinator. And this is actually the dream team that I wanted, him and Mike Vrabel. And I'll tell you right now, Elliott Wolf may suggest who they're going to draft and who they're going to get. Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels will make those final decisions.
All right, thanks for the call, David. Much That's clearer right, line. Agreed. And I think we're all on the same page, and I think Robert Kraft is on the same page. I think the dream team for him all along might have been, or once he decided to move on from Mayo, was Mike Vrabel, Josh McDaniels, and then let Vrabel kind of piece the rest around everybody. And that's where we stand here heading into the new season.
I think it's the right dream, too. I think it's going to work out.
Everybody's going to be happy.